Hey, Starting Nine listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard seltzer beverage company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome back to Starting Nine, episode 53. We got Jay Hay in the house. We got Dallas over in, where are you? Are you in LA right now?
I'm in a subway in LA, right next to Snake Plissken. Okay. It's been a long battle for us, but we're gonna try to make it out of here.
Yeah, that I can't really hear any enthusiasm in Dallas's voice, but I will tell you right now, the Oakland A's have caught the Seattle Mariners. They've caught them. They are dead even. Actually, the A's have more wins than the Seattle Mariners. So the
A's have more wins than any team in the National League, Jared. Ho-hum.
Yeah. So the prophecy that Dallas has sort of proclaimed back in April, when he seemed like a madman, which he is. I would not classify Dallas Braden as a sane man. However, Dallas Braden spoke of the Oakland A's as if they were a threat to win the World Series back in April, when Sean Manaea no-hit the Boston Red Sox. And I was like, that's cute. You know, like, that's your World Series. That's nice. You guys have your moment. It sucks that your the best moment of your season is going to happen in April, but that's the best moment of your season. And lo and behold, a few months later, here on August 2nd, we're now in the month of August, the Oakland A's currently hold a piece of that second wild card spot. Dallas, your thoughts here today as your Oakland A's have reached a postseason spot.
I told you we were coming.
He did tell us.
He did tell us that.
Shouldn't be news to anybody at this point. I knew what the team had offensively. It was a matter of being able to put that all together at the right time, at the same time. The pitching staff was always going to be a question because there was some unprovenness to it. And now we've got three some bitches having undergone Tommy John. Three guys that were supposed to be in our starting rotation, three on the fucking DL, won't see them again till next year. Maybe, probably not. Graveman, not going to see him. Who is it? Gossett, not going to see him. Jarrell Cotton, making his way back. I actually just got to spend some time with Jarrell in the at the Coliseum, talked to him at length. He's doing tremendously well with his rehab, so that's exciting. But you've got a cast of characters now who you had no idea what they. Half of them feel like they should have been selling insurance before the fucking start of the season, and now here they are. Slicing and dicing. Like, what were you going to get out of Brett Anderson? Who fucking knows? Who knows? But you've got somebody that's been serviceable up until this point. Sure, hasn't been sexy, hasn't been outstanding, but winning ball games, giving the Oakland A's offense a chance to win ball games. And frankly, at this point, if you just keep them under 10, and your team's got a fucking chance to win. That's what the Oakland A's offense feels like right now. And guys like Nick Martini, who I've been blowing for the last 3 weeks at the top of the lineup, has taken charge of that spot. He's got a nice little platoon going with Mark Canna out in center field. Canna's starting to rake righties as well as the way he's been hitting the lefties. It's fun to see. It's fun to watch, I'll tell you that. And I'm just glad I was able to put folks on notice early on.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I have greatly enjoyed watching the Oakland A's. You know, after the Red Sox are done winning whatever game that they've played that day, I usually turn on the A's, and I enjoy my West Coast baseball because I feel like it's not that I don't enjoy it more, but it's a different kind of enjoyment when I get to watch baseball, but I don't exactly have to be on Like, I don't have to be tweeting about this if I don't want to or anything like that. So, like, the A's are almost my escape team. I just get to just watch the A's do their thing. They've been a lot of fun to watch. So now that they're tied with the Seattle Mariners, how do you see this playing out moving forward? Because, like, I mean, the Mariners are going to get Robinson Cano back. He's been working out at first base and third base. Is not eligible for the postseason.
That'll only fuck shit up. That'll only fuck shit up.
Yeah,
they're trying to figure out how to appease Cano, how to not screw up what they've built over the entire season. Like, I would like to, and this is coming from an Oakland A's standpoint, I'd love to see them just completely fumble fuck themselves, trying to make everybody happy and fuck it up for everyone. I would love to see that happen because it's in an effort to appease somebody who's broken the rules. So you're going to now start to mess with chemistry that's been created over the course of an entire season with guys who have, in all honesty, sort of rallied around the idea that they're not going to have their fearless leader in Cano around for the postseason. So they're all looking at each other going, it's got to be you, it's got to be you, it's got to be you, it's got to be me. We've got to do this. And now here for the last 2.5 weeks, we're going to plug in Robinson Cano, who's supposed to really give us that shot in the arm, so then when we get to where we want to be, we're going to look around going, all right, well, fuck, now what do we do? Mm. I can't wait for that to happen. Can't wait. Because when you had the lead that you had and you were looking at the Oakland A's just thinking, no chance, no chance, no chance, all the Oakland A's did was keep their fucking head down, keep swinging it, and have now showed up here in the dog days of August with a share of that second wild card spot. And I'm telling you right now, don't take this from me. Just let me be the conduit between the A's, that clubhouse, and you, the grounds crew. What you're hearing right now, this is from the mouths of many, many of those players in Oakland. Don't think we're just satisfied with having gotten into the wild card conversation. There's no reason for us to not think we cannot compete for the division. Why can we not compete for the division? Because we weren't supposed to? Because the Astros have a really good pitching staff? We've got a decent offense, and we haven't been playing great at home. So we can change those things. We can change those things. They can't unhurt Altuve, Correa, Springer. They can't do those things. So there's time to catch up, and there's going to be time that the Astros have to sort of remold themselves. Shouldn't be hard. They're pretty a fucking good ball club. But the A's are real, and the mindset is very real.
Yeah, we can bring it back down to reality now. I mean, I highly doubt that the Astros are very concerned with the Oakland A's. The Oakland A's are a dangerous team. They're a hot team.
Nobody cares about the Astros. Nobody cares what the Astros think, Jared. Nobody gives a shit.
No one cares what the defending World Series champions think. This is a MLB podcast. This is not an Oakland A's podcast. From an objective standpoint, the Astros, they are the top dog. They are the team to beat. They are the defending World Series champions. Everyone is probably very happy for you, Dallas. Your Oakland A's have caught the Seattle Mariners. They are in the wild card spot. They are tied with the Mariners. And for content purposes, I'm sure there are a lot of people listening that hope that they actually get in. I don't think that there's anyone rooting against the A's just to see your misery. I think they want to see the A's get in for that, the chance to see the Astros and the A's tangle in a 5-game series. That would be something. If the A's could get in via the wild card spot, that would be something if they could get past that and meet the Astros. And I don't know. I don't know. Like, obviously, you like the Astros in that series, but the A's just have that Cinderella story, Team of Destiny feel to them. So that's something that we're going to have to keep an eye on moving forward, as we have all year, because I don't think that we've done one podcast without talking about the A's. But this episode is brought to you by our friends at Dunkin' Donuts. This is going to be super easy for me, because I have Dunkin' Donuts every day.
I don't.
We all know that afternoon feeling when we are battling to get through the day. The issue always is we have so much more to do. Like, I come in here, got a blog, Got to do Starting Nine, got to do Section 10, got to do the Starting Nine digital show, which is back tonight if you're listening on Thursday at 6 p.m.
Across, I'm doing it from my phone. It's going to be great.
Oh, God. You know, we got the Sirius channels. We got a lot to do. So it's so much going on in an empty stomach, it's difficult to know where to start. That's where the new Dunkin' Run menu can help. The Dunkin' Run menu has the perfect snacks to get you through the afternoon. They have a variety of snacks for only $2 that will help you get through the day. Donut fries, gluten-free brownies, pretzel bites, ham and cheese roll-ups, waffle breaded, chicken tenders. That sounds amazing. Next time you hit that 2 p.m. wall and you aren't sure that you can make it through the day, then it's time to make a Dunkin' Run and grab the perfect afternoon pick-me-up. Don't let the afternoon struggles ruin your day. Go on a Dunkin' Run. America runs on Dunkin', and Barstool runs on Dunkin'. We just had the trade deadline, which was a day that I needed Dunkin' because I was very cranky. I was very tired. A lot of shit going on. A lot of things happening in the world of baseball. I would say, surprisingly, for a lot of people going into that final 48 hours, the winner of the trade deadline at this point, because, I mean, we don't know how these things are going to pan out yet, would be the Pittsburgh Pirates. It has to be.
The Buccos.
It has to be the Pirates. They go out and get Chris Archer from the Tampa Bay Rays. They gave up a decent amount to make this deal happen. They also go out and grab a second closer. Now they have a bullpen where I guess they're sort of following the trend that's been developing over the last 3-4 years or so, where teams that have made deep runs, not necessarily all the teams that have won championships, but deep runs, getting to World Series, have built up a super bullpen of sorts. So not that this is a super bullpen, but when you have an all-star closer and another legit closer in your bullpen, That's pretty formidable. Now if you can get a guy who can go seven innings, now you're talking about a seven-inning ball game because of those two guys that are waiting for you at the back end. So Chris Archer goes to the Pirates, but it's not just – we talked about this on your show, Dialed In with DB, Sirius XM Radio. These aren't just rentals. There are teams that are going out there getting rental players for their stretch run this year. A lot of teams doing that, and that's okay because it works. Sometimes rentals pay off because you acquire a player who was stuck on a team in a shitty market, on a last-place team, going nowhere. They're a free agent at the end of the year. No one's noticing their performance. They go to a postseason team. They go on a run in August and September, and you can make a lot of money by doing that if you go out and get a rental player. Oh, yeah. But Chris Archer, not a rental player. He's under team control.
No,
for till 2021.
He's basically a free agent in 2022. When you think about the team options,
yes,
in 20 and 21.
Yeah.
This is a good move for Chris Archer as far as longevity is concerned, as well, in my opinion, because you're taking it over to the NL. But you look at his numbers against some of those AL East teams that he's been dealing with his entire career. The Red Sox, career 2-12 with a fucking 5.27 in 111 innings. Versus the Orioles, he's 6-10 with an ERA north of 5. 5.07 in 113 and two-thirds innings pitched. Now he's got a little bit better success against the Jays and the Yankees. Gets the Jays 7-4 with a 3 ERA, 155 innings. The Yanks 6-7, record not sexy, with a 3.14 over 117 innings. So you get him out of the AL East, and again, the Jays and the Yankees a little bit better success than the Red Sox and Orioles, but he's had success in interleague against the NL, 3.29, 6-9 record, nice little record there for him. But the strikeouts per 9, 10.5, 420, K to walk ratio, smoking. It's a smoking K to walk ratio. 1.13 whip as well.
Yeah.
So now you've got him in the friendly confines of the NL with a pitcher in the lineup. The 8-hole is basically a second pitcher because he has no fucking idea what's coming because he's got the pitcher behind him. So I like Chris Archer now in an environment where he can pitch to get to the postseason. They're in.
Actually, a move that I liked a lot is very endearing to the fans right off the bat. Chris Archer gets traded to the Pittsburgh Pirates, has worn the number 22 for his entire career with Tampa, and says that he will not wear the number 22 with the Pittsburgh Pirates because that was Andrew McCutchen's number, and he believes that the organization will eventually retire that number someday, so he is not interested in wearing Andrew McCutchen's number. I thought that was a very classy move.
It is. It's a tip of the cap. It's something that you just understand in the game of baseball. There's folks that came before me. There's folks that have made an impact. I don't need to try to fill those shoes. I'm just going to put my own shoes on.
Brian Dozier goes from the Minnesota Twins to the Dodgers. Last night made a huge impact. That was actually a great game. For as much as it sucked, my Milwaukee Brewers took it on the chin last night. But it was a great game, and that game does not go into extra innings. The Dodgers do not have an opportunity to walk that off in extras without Brian Dozier, who had the game-tying home run, had a double in the late innings there. He's going to fit in just fine. That made a couple good defensive plays as well. Dallas, your thoughts on Brian Dozier going to the Dodgers?
Well, yeah, it helps them out. It helps them out defensively. It's just a I don't want to call it just a depth move because that's not necessarily what it is. They've got other guys that they need to utilize. They need to keep fresh as far as game speed goes, game reps, you know, Chris Taylor, Kike. But this is depth, especially against lefties. 16 jacks against the southpaws this year for Brian Dozier, OBP north of 350 or 340, somewhere around there, I think. So, it's a move that provides them depth. It's a move that provides them some offense against the lefties that they can, you know, sort of bank on. I like the move. It's something they had to do with the lack of production they were getting from second base.
To Dallas's point too, like his numbers against lefties, he cited his on base percentage like solid this year. I think there's reason to hope that his numbers against lefties improve based on what he had done from 2016 to 2017 against them. Like, his numbers were fucking crazy against left-handers. OPS over 1,000, 307 batting average, which is, you know, pretty unusual for Brian Dozier's hitting profile. I think if he's only playing against lefties or mostly playing against lefties, this could be a real, real strong fit. And probably nobody in baseball utilizes their players to the platoon advantage and shifting them around and putting them in positions to succeed quite like the Dodgers do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I think it's a great fit. Obviously, just judging by last night, he went in. Dave Roberts was very excited to see him. His new Dodger teammates very excited to see him. They know that they got a guy that is not going
Has he already had more of an impact than Manny?
That's a tough question. I don't necessarily.
That's what I do around here.
Yeah.
I
think he's had, in terms of like a single standout game, yes. But overall, I think, you know, Manny Machado from a defensive perspective makes a way bigger impact. And just his presence in that Dodgers lineup changes everything too. So it depends on how you want to look at it. But I would acknowledge that Dozier has had the better standout game so far as a Dodger.
391 on base percentage for Manny so far. So the power hasn't necessarily been there. The highlight reel hits.
He's only hit one home run.
But he's getting on base. He's contributing.
Yeah, he's doing his thing. He actually, I mean, his at-bat against Knebel last night was fun to watch. Power against power. He got gassed. I mean, that was just challenge time. Struck out. I think he's...
Oh, you watched that game?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool, because guess who can't watch the game? Hey, Manfred, you fucking ass clown. People
what?
Out in L.A. can't watch the Dodgers. You dipshit. Figure it the fuck out. Figure out how to get your game into the mainstream. You want to sit there and yell at the fucking clouds? You fuck. Figure it the fuck out.
I love this Dallas Braden we got this morning.
He's got red-ass Dallas. Red-ass Dallas. Tommy Pham, starting nine alumni, goes to the Tampa Bay Rays. I was surprised by this move. I don't know.
Yeah, so was I. Felt like they had a guy in the outfield that was doing just fine for him, a guy named Corey fucking Dickerson.
Yeah.
Oh, not so much, huh? But I get it. It's a cost-effective move. You have 4 years of cheap Tommy Pham at half a mil clip. Coming off a career year, 306 slash 306, 414, right? 520.
411.
Like that. 411, sorry.
Yeah, 411, 520. 931 OPS was 11th for MVP OPS. That year. Not having nearly as good of a year this year. Like you
not
said,
so much.
Career
not.
Year. It was definitely his standout year. So, yeah, I mean, if you were going to deal him, obviously it would have been nice to have dealt him this past winter, sell super high on him. But, yeah, goes to Tampa. Nah, you know.
You don't seem like you really have a take on this.
No, I don't
then
really.
Let me interrupt you.
Sure.
Because I do. I think this is a great move for the Rays. I think it's a classic Rays move.
Why?
Because he was a distressed asset in St. Louis. Every report that I've read about this trade has said that one of the Cardinals' motivating factors was nobody liked Tommy Pham.
Really?
Yes. And like that's not like Twitter speculation. That's like reporters attaching their names to that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the reporter in front of me. I probably should, but. But I think this is a Rays classic buy low. Dallas referenced the cheap years of control. I do think that, yes, the Corey Dickerson move doesn't still make a lot of sense in hindsight, but
make any sense
or even at the time
they're like, fuck, we know what route we're going.
Sure.
And Corey Dickerson cannot be on that route for us. Sorry. We're not interested in delivering him the paper. He's no longer on our paper route. We need to get somebody else. We need to get a guy who's got a smaller house, a way cheaper house, and it's closer to our printing press because that's costing us way too much to deliver Corey Dickerson the paper. Let's give it to Tommy Pham now. It's only a fucking half mil, and I know right where he lives. It's right down the street. It's right there. Super cheap, super easy. So they saw that coming. That's why, like, there's no other way to look at, like, that's all I needed to see. You're going to go and get Tommy Pham after having moved Corey Dickerson in the year he's had a pretty good year?
Yeah, very good year.
Yes, definitely better than Tommy Pham's year.
Yes. His OPS might be over 800 this year.
But I guess my point is I would not be surprised to have this be a classic buy low and for him to bounce back. And if I'm the Cardinals, like, I get it. I don't know exactly how annoying Tommy Pham is to be around or what kind of clubhouse presence he is.
But I mean, fuck, buy him the Nordic track, Jay. Hey, no, why are they so fucking pissed off? The guy wants a Nordic track, buy him a fucking
Seriously. And I just don't think the Cardinals are in a position organizationally to be shedding talent like this for non-elite impact minor leaguers. Like, they have enough problems with their outfield where I just don't know if I would be trading Tommy Pham at the low point of his value coming off what was legitimately, like, not an MVP season, but like a legitimate cornerstone impact level season last year.
Yeah, like, are the Cardinals going to fuck around and look up and be like, holy shit, we got old quick.
Yeah, we have nothing now.
And we don't have much going on.
No, they don't. No, they don't. I would say not the biggest, but probably the biggest lightning rod trade of the deadline would have been the Houston Astros acquiring Roberto Osuna from the Blue Jays in a deal in which Ken Giles goes the other way, among other pieces. This deal to me, I know Buster not predicted, but suggested that the Astros might be a team that was interested, and you sort of look at it on the surface and you say, wow, the Astros got a legitimate closer, arguably one of the best in baseball. But you sort of look at, you know, all the other details involved here. He's suspended for domestic assault. He's currently serving a 75-game suspension for domestic assault. Had the court date is either coming up or just recently passed.
It was yesterday.
Yeah,
yesterday.
If more details emerge, the league can actually suspend him again.
Yes.
Without another incident occurring, if more details come out, the league can pursue further discipline with Osuna. So I understand that the Houston Astros needed a closer. Ken Giles, just from a performance standpoint, was not working out. Then you had the incident with AJ Hinch on the mound. He gets demoted the next day. So they were done. They had washed their hands of Ken Giles. The Astros miss out on Zach Britton, who went to the Yankees. After that, where are you sort of looking? You looking at the Reds? You looking at the Reds for maybe some relief help?
Yes.
Iglesias. Yeah. They have a few different options that you could have at least taken a look at. But then you look at the situation that's going on with Osuna, and if that's the best that you can do, that's, I mean, because you even talked to Justin Verlander, and he was like, yeah, no, they never said anything to me. Like, did they consult you on it?
Look at you. Look at you going fucking soft, you fucking pussy.
He didn't. No one ever said anything to him. That's what he said. Justin Verlander and Lance McCullers were both very outspoken after that Astros prospect.
I'm turning heel. You want to fucking win ball games? This is what you do. You fucking, it's the ballsiest move in baseball right now. Because you just signed Ike Turner during the fucking hashtag MeToo era, all right? You gave zero fucks when you were thinking about this move. What? You want to know what I'm moving? You want to know what I'm thinking about? I'm thinking about another fucking trophy in my trophy case. Fuck all of you who think that I shouldn't or can't sign one of the best young closers in baseball. We were talking about this kid and his career trajectory in the same sentence as fucking Craig Kimbrell, Mariano Rivera, Kenley fucking Jansen, Jared. That's the kind of stopper they went out and got Roberto Ozuna. Yeah, sure. He likes to punch people he shouldn't, and they look like a complete asshole organization for taking their stance that they have and then going back on and going, well, actually, we guys, what you didn't read was the fine print where we said, if he fucks up originally with us, we have to wash our hands of him. All right, but that's not what happened here, guys. He fucked up in a Blue Jays uniform. We are the land of opportunity here as the Houston Astros, and we welcome him with open arms. And you're gonna get the company line that you got from Verlander. And I say company line because initially he has to tell you, look, we don't know all the details, right? Once we get all the details, we'll be able to kind of assess and move forward, have a conversation, yada fucking yada. That's what you're supposed to say. But Justin Verlander, should details emerge that do not shed a positive light on this situation at all, he's not going to just sit there and wait for Ozuna to try to, I don't know, paint this in a better... Nope. They're going to have words. There will be a conversation, and it's going to be known very fucking quickly that you're going to shape up and you're going to fly right, or you're going to get out of our way. That's gonna be the message.
But why would you welcome that presence in your clubhouse when you're the defending World Series champions who have a very decent chance at repeating? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
You can't tell me that they think that they have a very real chance of repeating if they've moved the guy at the back end of their bullpen that they were going to be relying on. They're like, look, he's not somebody that we've thought we could rely on. We called their bluff early in the year. We asked ourselves, is Ken Giles somebody that we can trust? And what was our answer?
Nope.
No. And guess what? The Astros didn't think they could trust him either. So they sent him the fuck home. All right? And now they've said, well, guys, I know that was the move that we kind of felt like we wanted to make and needed to make and dig our heels in. Well, do you realize we don't have a fucking closer now? We're going to need one of those moving forward. Going to need one. So pick up Ozuna.
I just think it is – I think it's gross, honestly. I think the Astros and maybe Lunau specifically drastically overestimated the amount of goodwill – Yeah, the amount of goodwill that they had created with their fan base mm-hmm. and with Major League Baseball as a whole. I think if you gave them truth serum right now, they would say that they did not anticipate this level of blowback on the trade.
No, but you know what? What did the Patriots have to do in an effort to become that organization that was going to be the land of second chances? They had to make their first unfavorable move. They had to make that first move that people were like, oh, God, really?
For sure.
Trying to bring this fucking... Let's see how that fucking works out. And I know what you're saying, that, well, Dallas, the Patriots have won a few Super Bowls. They've got a fucking MVP. They've got...
five.
Well, the Houston Astros have just won the World Series. They've got some pretty outspoken leaders as far as the game is concerned and around the game, men that are respected. So the way that it gets handled by the clubhouse is going to make all the impact for the fans, because if it's turbulent in the clubhouse, that will play out on the field, and we will see that, and it'll play out in the media, and we will see that and hear that, and the fans will identify that very readily, and that's when the clamoring and the pitchforks will come out for Lunau, is because they're going to say, you greedy, son of a bitch, put us in this position because you care more about the trophy case than you do about the human beings that are tied to this community that represent the organization. And Luhnow is going to go, yeah, hey, the reason you fucking like these guys is because they won the World Series last year. All right? So shut the fuck up and let the closer go out there and do his job. That's where Luhnow's coming
yeah,
from.
Yeah, but like, don't you think that Jeff Luhnow should have said to any, like, consulted anyone? No, I'm not, he doesn't have to pull the whole clubhouse. But knowing that Justin Verlander, your top dog in that rotation, was so outspoken against the Astros prospect that beat the shit out of his girlfriend on video on Twitter and said, they said he should be in jail. They said this guy should like enjoy the
rest
of your
life
without without baseball. You don't belong in the game, and I hope that you end up in jail is what like McCullers said too. For Luhnow to not even go in the clubhouse and talk to at least some of these guys and be like, hey, we're looking at Osuna. Like, we might be able to get him on the cheap because of the situation that's going on. Like, we've done our homework. He, you know, we think he's changed. How does that conversation not take place? How do you inject that person into this group without consulting anybody?
I just told you. I think it's a level of greed that got ahead of him.
I agree,
and there is no reversing that. And they're the only way that you can avoid being that greedy son of a bitch in everybody else's eyes is by saying what he said, which is, well, you know, we've got to wait for everything to come out. We feel like we've done our extreme due diligence, or whatever he said, to try to make sure that this guy's in a right spot headspace wise, and it's not going to happen again, and we'll get a support group around him, blah blah blah. Well, I get what you're saying. Trust me, I understand it all. It's a horrible look. The message you're sending is not a good one, and you are going to now have your leaders. You're putting your leaders in a tough spot, especially when you've got the Oakland A's chomping at your fucking heels right now. You've got a lot of stuff to worry yourself with now, having these guys police the clubhouse because you have forced them to. It's one thing to ask them to try to take care of something in-house that's just sort of bubbled up. Well, you brought this on. You're mixing oil and water right now on the stove over an open flame, and you're asking your leaders to make sure that it doesn't boil over and blow the fuck up. Like, that's just not a good move.
The last thing I'll say on this is that I do think this is the extreme bad end of viewing the game. Like, this is the bad result of extreme sabermetric or analytical evaluations of situations within baseball. Because the only reason that Osuna became a target or became an option that they wanted to pursue was because his value was depressed because he was caught up in a domestic violence situation.
Yep.
Like that to me is just, it's like Luhnow being a robot and being unable to resist like the most extreme elements of his programming. Like he's done so many good things and it's like, I cannot resist to get this.
Live by the sword.
No doubt.
Live by the sword, die by the sword. Live by the sword, die by the sword. You want to treat me like a commodity and treat me like a number and just a resource when things are going well and it can benefit you to actually move me? Well, looks like I'm here to reap the benefits of me being that number. Looks like I'm here to reap the benefits of me being just that resource, because now I'm just that resource that you can't live without, Mr. Luhnow.
Yeah.
Come find me.
And we mentioned him earlier. It is beyond fucked up that Robinson Cano is ineligible for the postseason because he took a PED, but Roberto Osuna, good to go.
100% guarantee that that's changed this offseason. 100% guarantee.
Has to. I mean, it just makes zero sense. Like, you know, oh, well, you know, he beat the shit out of his girlfriend, but at least he didn't take steroids. Yeah, that's fine.
Well, like, that's just, that's, I am not disagreeing at all. Let's not let that get misconstrued. I'm not disagreeing with that take.
No, I know where you're going. Yep.
But if there's no legal precedent set and there's already been like the idea that Osuna could potentially get suspended for longer and maybe the Astros get blindsided and they're like, oh, hold on. So now he's all of a sudden not eligible. Now he can't go to the post. Now you're going to bang him for the postseason. Get your fucking popcorn ready. I want to see how that plays out. I would love to see how that plays out. Like, who makes that decision and who just accepts that decision? Who just wears that on the chin? Because, like I said, there's no precedent set for that.
Yeah, that'd be a wild hill to die on. Like, no, not the same thing. Like, you can't cheat our great game. You can beat the shit out of your wife. That's fine. If you take steroids, right, motherfucker, you are not seeing October, right?
Well, that's what the Hall of Fame is, right? The Hall of Fame is full of men who they feel were not great men of character, men who weren't the men that you wanted raising your children or setting an example for, but they were good ball players.
Yeah, it's not the character clause, it's the character asterisk steroid clause.
Yeah.
Because that's really what we're talking about.
Correct. This weather might be okay for the boys this summer, but the regular people like you and me, not so much. But I know a way to outsmart the heat and humidity, and that's with men's and women's cool cotton underwear from Tommy John, the revolutionary clothing brand that's redefined comfort. Cool cotton isn't like ordinary cotton. It's made with moisture-wicking technology, so it dries 4 to 5 times faster than regular cotton, keeping you 2 to 3 times cooler. Like all Tommy John underwear, cool cotton is guaranteed to never ride up, making bunching, sagging, and even wedgies impossible. Impossible. How does Tommy John do it? By combining cutting-edge, lightweight fabrics with patented comfort focused designs for a fit so perfect it's almost like wearing nothing at all, which is what Dallas Braden does. In fact, Tommy John is so confident in their underwear that if you don't love your first pair, you can get a full refund with their best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. That includes their new life-changing women's underwear that sold out in just 6 weeks, which is now fully back in stock. At the end of the day, there's regular underwear and there's Tommy John. No adjustment needed. Hurry to TommyJohn.com/starting. For 20% off your first order, that is TommyJohn.com/starting for 20% off TommyJohn.com/starting. We talked about the winners of the deadline, the Pirates being the biggest one. Dallas, you and I had this conversation on radio yesterday. The biggest losers, I mentioned the Mets, who definitely should have sold off DeGrom, Syndergaard, whoever the fuck could have gotten them a decent return. The biggest loser, though, the Washington Nationals. The Washington Nationals.
Holy hell.
The only moves that they made were punishment moves. They did nothing they didn't sell, they didn't buy.
They were like Ken Giles. They just punched themselves in the face a few times.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what they did at the deadline. They made two moves. They made two moves. And these aren't even trades. I mean, one was just like a DFA. But they made two moves to just punch themselves in the face. They didn't get better. They didn't get better for this year to make a run at the division or a wild card spot. They didn't get better for the future by getting prospects. They just kind of punched themselves in the face. And what we mean by that was that they designated for assignment Sean Kelly. For this one stinks to me. He's got a whip under one. He's has as many strikeouts as he has innings pitched. And they designated him for assignment for throwing his glove. I mean, how many temper tantrums have we seen? Well, you had the blow up with Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg. Bryce Harper has had many blow ups over the course of the season. It happens. Trey Turner, there was the incident where he didn't run out a bunt. There's a few different people on this team.
That's Heart and Hustle Award winner.
Yeah, that is true.
When you talk about him not running shit out.
Yeah,
right?
There's been plenty of instances that you can point to with a number of different Washington Nationals where you can call into question effort, focus, professionalism, the whole deal. This team right now, according to all reports, is somewhat of a dumpster fire. And they are the biggest losers, in my opinion, besides the Mets at the trade deadline, for literally doing nothing to get better now or for the future. They didn't sell. They didn't buy. They're not performing to expectations. So now you have kind of a shitstorm on your hand, Dallas. What's your take on everything that's happened so far with the Nationals?
It's like that. It's like that meme of The Office. Where Michael Scott is just running around, people with fucking madness. People are screaming.
Well, because
like, that's kind of what.
What was it? Was it Jeff Passan? Was it Jeff Passan who had the story about the anonymous source talking about the state of the Nationals? And apparently, they believed it to be Brandon Kintzler, who was then traded for being the mole. And we don't even know that for a fact, but I would assume that if you're going to go as far as to trade this player, completely remove him from your clubhouse, you have some pretty circumstantial evidence to pinpoint that he was the person who was leaking information from inside the Nationals clubhouse about the state of affairs, what's going on, what's the temperature of the clubhouse, to what degree is this team an unmitigated disaster.
Gone. That doesn't even seem to be the case, too, because from what I've heard, from what I understand, is Passan has actually gotten somebody to own up to the idea or the fact that this wasn't a player. This wasn't even a player, actually.
So they made somebody walk the plank for no reason.
So now Lizzo's like, all right, well, fuck, if it wasn't him, who else could it be? Oh, this guy's throwing shit around. Maybe he's really angry with us. Get him out of here, too. Kelly, it's fucking Kelly the mole.
It's the glove thrower.
It's Dave Martinez. You're out. Where's Dusty?
Yeah, the son of a bitch. I mean, Dave Martinez has got to be sitting there going, what the fuck did I get myself
into?
Dude,
I think about that with Dave Martinez and Mickey Callaway like every day. Like, I waited so long to get a job, and this is what I got.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is, yeah, exactly. Like for Dave, because again, man, I have so much respect for Dave and his career as a coach and as an instructor, as a player too, obviously, but he's coming in there where everybody's looking around going, well, you know, the guy we had here before, Kelly is doing all right. Well, he's doing okay. Like we're happy with him, but I guess he was the reason we didn't get to the fucking postseason. I guess he's the reason that we haven't won our World Series. So I guess we'll get him the fuck out of here and bring you in. So no pressure, Dave. All right. No pressure off the bat. Just nice, smooth, easy sailing. And now you've got this kind of shit going on. Like, he's had to deal with the Bryce Harper attitude or perceived bad attitude, whatever. Now he's had to deal with the rumblings. Like, you're coming in to a first-year managerial slot, sitting down, watching your team's best player at the very beginning of the year tell the media to go fuck themselves. Today and only today will you get to ask your questions about where I'm going, free agency, and yada yada. So, like, you got to think, sitting down day one, you've already been told that you're not the guy that they'd love to have here. They had somebody else that they liked, but fuck it, we'll deal with it. The only people backing you are the ones who made the move to get you here. And now you're listening to your best player, basically in a roundabout way, let everybody know that he will be entertaining free agency, and it's not going to be during the season. It will indeed be after the season. But for right now, leave me alone when it comes to stuff like that. So he had a lot on his plate to deal with very early. Then it all started to crumble. And now he's going, fuck, I got my GM like auctioning off my best player and then pulling him back in going, nah, sorry, just fucking with you guys. I really like him. I really like the shape of this ball club and where they're headed right now as well. So on that note, if you're interested in Gio Gonzalez or maybe somebody else in the bullpen, those guys are available too. But again, I really like this team. And Dave's going, okay, what the fuck is going on? He's firing people. He doesn't even know if they're committing these egregious acts and they're spreading false information. Who knows? Who knows? But that's what he's dealing with. Not a good spot. Not a fun spot.
All right, let's reassess with the room here. Washington Nationals. I know Dallas and I have sort of buckled in on the Nationals making the postseason. Jay Hay, I don't really know where you've been at with the Nationals.
You know,
with the ebbs and flows of this season.
I don't like to just take a hard line stance on something if I don't have it.
Yeah.
But if pressed, I'm going to say that the Nationals do make the postseason.
They do.
Yeah. I don't think this is over. I think this is a clusterfuck, and I think they've handled it really poorly.
Yeah.
But I think both of the teams ahead of them are...
So you think they're going to win the division then?
I do.
Wow.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, man. Wow. Okay. All right. Dallas, where are you at?
I want them to not win the division, to be clear.
Yeah.
I'd love to see the Phillies win.
Me too. That'd be nice. Well, I still think they... Yeah. Okay. Dallas, where are you at with the Washington Nationals? It's tough.
It is so tough. It is so tough because you just don't know about the staying power between Philly and Atlanta. Are they going to end up kicking the shit out of each other down the stretch and just be like bloodied and battered? And then here comes fucking Washington traipsing in behind them, like, "Hey, what have you guys been doing? How's it going? We're here. We're still here." And they like, oh, man, I'm not jumping off yet. I'm not jumping off yet.
You're not jumping off.
I'm not jumping off yet. Jay Hay, I'm with you.
Yeah, baby.
About the waiver deadline, I'm not jumping off.
So, I mean, I'm not jumping off yet, but I...
I'll never let go, Jerry.
Yeah,
I'll never let go.
I'm reluctant to say that I think they're going to still win the division, but I'm not jumping off yet. I'm not saying that they will. I'm sticking with the Nationals.
Sticking with maybe.
Yeah, really.
Great conviction, pal.
You're really
fucking selling it, pal. Really selling it.
I'm not jumping off
yet. Just bail on this point.
No.
Let me talk.
Okay, go.
I do want to say Sean W.S. Wood _44 on Twitter reminded me about a stance I took on why the Nationals were in trouble, which was Daniel Murphy. And I believe I said I think they would get almost nothing out of him for the remainder of the year. He pointed out on Twitter yesterday, I believe it was, Murphy's July, .352, .430 on base percentage, .577 slugging, 4 homers, 17 RBI. So as of right now, I'm wrong on that one. And if he continues to hit like that, I do think that's a game changer for the Nats.
Yeah, and imagine if their fucking right fielder decided to show up and play baseball.
That would be nice. That would be nice.
Imagine that.
But why not make this team better then? If they are 5 games back and you don't know what you're going to get from the Phillies and the Braves moving forward, why didn't you do something about this, Rizzo?
Because I secretly think they wanted to be wooed and enamored with a
Bryce Harper package.
Yes, yes, and I think they were really anticipating a team saying, "Fuck it, here you go," and it just didn't happen. I think they were really anticipating maybe New York giving them the run of their system. Because they're looking to plug somebody in for fucking Aaron Judge. And thinking Cashman's going to get cocky and say, "Come on, just give me Harper now. That way we can cut all the bullshit through the offseason. And we'll sign Harper 7 days after the World Series just to let everybody know that he was our guy." Like, I think that's kind of maybe what they were waiting for. And it just never happened. So then you've got all this other bullshit going on, and Rizzo is in panic mode. Like, fuck, all right, well, I'll just start making moves anyway then. If nobody wants to trade with me, if nobody wants to give me what I want,
yeah, you're cut, you're traded.
We'll start releasing guys. You're a fucking mole. You're a glove tosser. Well, anybody else?
You're ugly.
Pineapple on their pizza. You're fucking out of here.
I will say, perhaps more than any trade deadline that I can remember over the last 5 years or so, I really wish this trade deadline, or I wish I could see what this trade deadline, how it would have played out if it had happened 10 or 15 years ago. Because the idea of Manny Machado and Bryce Harper both being available at a trade deadline, you play that out right 15 years ago, and teams are literally bankrupting their systems to get these guys for a rent, even as a rental. Yeah.
Absolutely. We would probably be able to get 2 general managers at Rough and Rowdy to determine who would get the player. Like, that's we could probably do that 10 to 15 years ago.
Yeah, it is crazy how rapidly the game has evolved in terms of asset usage and stuff like that. But I do think it would have been way crazier to have these players out there a long time ago, because even the Machado deal, like, even hardcore baseball fans possibly knew one player that went back to the Orioles in that, and that's Diaz. Mm-hmm. Nobody, I'm not buying that anybody else was a known quantity in that deal, and that's for one of the five or six best players in Major League Baseball. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
It's not crazy. Like, yeah. It makes a lot of sense, but it's just, it's changed a lot.
Yeah.
Well, it's teams knowing that they could go or look for that same sort of production in a platoon's worth of players
for sure.
Instead of just one.
Yeah. That puts a wrap on our Nats talk for the week. Oof. A little check-in with the Washington Nationals, who we're definitely not bailing on. Sticking with those Nats.
You have left yourself so much wiggle room to be right here, haven't you?
Definitely, for sure, not bowing out on those Nats. It could happen.
Yet.
It could happen, for sure. Dollar Shave Club delivers everything that you need to feel and smell your best and look your best as well. Dollar Shave Club has everything you need to get ready in the bathroom, any particular product that you have fallen in love with outside of the razor. Dollar Shave Club, yes, that Dollar Shave Club delivers everything that you need to look, feel, and smell your best. You name it. Shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, hair gel, even a wipe that'll leave your tush feeling tingly clean. I'm a big fan of their amber and lavender calming body cleanser. Never smelled anything like it. Good luck finding a product like that at the store.
I have noticed you've smelled a little differently.
I have. It's because of Dollar Shave Club.
Good. Good for them. Yeah. And you.
And for me. Mostly for me. All of Dollar Shave Club's products are made with top shelf ingredients that won't break your budget. You'll feel the difference. Plus, shipping is included with your membership. And here's a great way to try a bunch of Dollar Shave Club's products. For just $5, you can get their Daily Essentials Starter Set. It comes with Body Cleanser, One Wipe Charlie's, their amazing butt wipes, their world-famous shave butter, and their best razor, the Six Blade Executive.
Do not cook with the shave butter.
Yeah, for sure, don't do that. Do not do that. Keep the blades coming for a few more bucks a month and add in shampoo, toothpaste, or anything else you need for the bathroom. Speaking of your next month, for a limited time only, use code STARTING at checkout to get $5 off your second month of the club. That's code STARTING at dollarshaveclub.com to save $5 on your second month. Join the club today. As we continue sort of our coverage of the trade deadline, Ian Kinsler goes to the Boston Red Sox. This was necessary. The Red Sox needed a second baseman. They've been rolling out Eduardo Nunez, who is a disaster defensively, has come around offensively. He's been hitting very well, but is a disaster in the field. And you sort of look at the Dustin Pedroia situation. He was targeting the end of May, comes back for three games. We haven't seen him since. And even if Pedroia were to return at any point this season, you can't depend on that guy to be an everyday player, at least not in 2018. I'm not ruling out the rest of his career. I know a lot of people are questioning, you know, his career moving forward. I'm kind of looking at this purely from a 2018 perspective. You needed someone like Ian Kinsler. If it wasn't going to be Dozier, which seemed to be at the top of the wish list for most Red Sox fans, it ended up being Kinsler, who's been red hot offensively in the month of July, and also hits guys in that Yankee rotation pretty well. So that'll come in handy because the Red Sox historically have not hit CC Sabathia well. Ian Kinsler has.
Look, this move is not about offense. That move is not about offense. That move is about knowing what you just said about your boy Eske is not so much on the defensive side. Going to need you to quit knocking them down. I'm going to need you to field them. And you gotta throw guys out too. This has to be a complete thing from A to Z. Catch the ball, throw the ball so the other guys can catch it. They need to be able to rely on that. So that's what they went out and did, is they got the fucking runner-up for the gold glove last year at the position in Ian Kinsler, and they've gotten a veteran who's been there, who's done that. That helps. So when you're thinking about what Dustin Pedroia was going to mean to this club if he was healthy enough to come back and be in the lineup, you're sort of getting, I don't want to call him a poor man's Pedroia, but you're getting a version of that same gamer, grinder, grit type of baseball rat approach. And that is who Ian Kinsler is to a fucking T. Shows up every single day with his hard hat and boots ready to go to work. So this is more about filling a clear defensive void, but also reestablishing the mindset that we are here to go to the fucking World Series and win. We are not here to be happy with winning the division and be excited about the sort of season we've had. No, we're here to win a fucking ring. You want to know who acknowledges attitude in players like that, who can identify? Your boy AC, man on fire, Alex Cora.
That's my guy. That's my guy right there. The Braves get Adam Duvall from the Cincinnati Reds. Not having an outstanding season, really. It's actually the worst season of his career. He's hitting good. 205, 685 OPS. Not exactly great.
Still
but
got the juice, Carrabas. Still got the juice, baby.
Yeah, he still has got 15 homers. He's driven in 61 runs. So, yeah, I mean, you got the pop aspect of it. But the Braves, you know, the Braves keep chugging along. Only a half game back of the Phillies. They had to do something, and they made a couple of moves. Speaking of having to do something, do you have a thought on
Duvall?
Yeah,
just one quick thing.
Yeah.
I just think it says a lot about how quickly and how many quality Braves prospects are coming in the system that we've already quickly moved past the Lucas Sims and Matt Whistler era. Like, those guys were names in their prospect system, and they're just cast aside for Adam Duvall's worst season.
Literally his worst
season.
That's
all I had to say.
Yeah, literally his worst season. The Yankees go out and get Lance Lynn from the Minnesota Twins. Lance Lynn, what did he sign, a one-year deal with Minnesota?
I thought it was 2 years.
Was it? I thought it was a one-year deal. I'll have to go back and look. Anyways.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you were correct. One-year deal, $12 million.
Okay, one-year deal with the Minnesota Twins, who are looking to get back to the postseason. That didn't happen. So they sold off some pieces, and the Yankees get a starting pitcher who might actually, I mean, at the time when they go out and get Lynn, it's like, all right, yeah, cool. I mean, it's not an ace, not a frontline guy, former All-Star. But
yeah,
you have a couple of days after, or the day, literally the day after the trade deadline, Sonny Gray goes out there, gets rocked by the Baltimore Orioles. And it sounds like he's kind of going to be out of the rotation, at least for the time being. So you go from, oh, okay, underwhelming move. You get Lance Lynn. That's nice. Whatever. To, you might need this guy. If Sonny Gray's out of the rotation, Lance Lynn slots in quite nicely. And I think they called up Luis Sessa. They're going to have Sessa back in the rotation. But Lance Lynn is a guy who has pitched decently enough this year, even against good teams. He's pitched well against good teams. So this is a good move for the Yankees.
And he's got the experience out of the bullpen as a starter. And Lance Lynn has got a little bit of fuck you in him as well. And that gets me around.
Does that appeal to you? I can't believe that.
Wow.
It does. So he's jazzed about now strapping on the uni. He's jazzed about the rivalry with Boston. He's excited. He's going to be playing meaningful baseball. I like this move, especially on the heels of the Sonny Gray blow up on the mound, but then on the Sonny Gray blow up off of the field, what has happened to him now with all of the Twitter bullshit that's gone on over the past few weeks with baseball. He's seemingly getting caught up in that as well.
Basically, don't be bad at sports or else you're going to get your old tweets retweeted.
And I said this about Sonny when he got traded to the Yankees. And people were like, what the fuck are you – what are you talking about? I said, I don't think the Yankees have a real good handle on what they're getting. They don't have an understanding of what they're getting. And I cited this very thing, and it was very specific. There's an article that I believe I believe Eno Saris of Fangraphs at the time,
good writer,
wrote this article talking about, just saw Eno at the Coliseum the other day. Shouts Eno. He's my spirit animal as far as haircuts are concerned. I said, Sonny Gray, with the way he likes to fiddle around with pitch grips, people might think that, oh, wow, he's so innovative. What, crazy. What a gunslinger. Goes out there, tries to. For me, that was a red flag, that this guy's having success at the big league level, but he's constantly fiddling and tinkering. So is it a matter of him not understanding why he's having the success? Is he not understanding how he's being successful? But whatever it was, it didn't set well with me, because it was just, it gave me the idea that he wasn't secure or wasn't confident or in the know or in tune with his craft to the extent that I would like to have my frontline guy be. And I knew that the pressure was going to be something that a lot of people think they can handle until they get thrown in that situation. Kind of like Mike Tyson says, everybody's got a game plan until you get punched in the fucking face.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I think has happened here in New York, is everybody had a game plan about Sonny Gray and how dominant he was in the postseason for the Oakland Athletics and how great of an arm and great of a future he has. Everybody got really excited about that, but didn't bother maybe to do a little bit of the homework where, you know, what sort of personality does this guy have? We've watched him flourish in an area in which nobody is watching baseball, which was the West Coast, the Oakland A's, and now you're in the limelight of New York and that media. That's a different beast, boys. That's a totally different beast.
Is it all just that? Because, I mean, he's had a season this bad before in Oakland. I mean, this is almost identical to the season that he had in 2016. 5-11, 5.69 ERA, 74 earned runs in 117 innings. Right now he's at 64 earned runs in 103 and two-thirds, 5.56 ERA. He's basically having the same season that he had in 2016 with the A's.
He's not dealing with the microphones. He's not dealing with that, though. Now in New York, every day, like, he might have to answer questions about a lackluster performance on his bullpen day. That didn't happen in Oakland. That's not happening in Oakland. They're leaving you alone. You're going out there and shitting the bed, and then you come back in and answer those questions on your start night, and then you don't get talked to again until the fifth day, until after you've either turned it around and they're asking you about that, or you've pissed down your leg again and they're asking you, you know, what do you think's wrong? What's the matter? And you get those three questions and you fucking keep it moving. Not in New York. Not in New York. As our man Pecan likes to say, there's a full frothy gangbang of reporters right around you waiting to take every shot they can, waiting to sink their teeth and claws into you and shred you and try to expose you for a weak-hearted, soulless, gutless individual. And it's like, holy shit, aren't you guys like just supposed to be covering the team and the media here? Like, I didn't know you were trying to expose me for some mental midget and trying to, well, that's what happens in New York. That's what happens in the large markets.
I will say my one takeaway from watching that Sonny Gray start and subsequent Lance Lynn appearance was Hubs during our MLB trade deadline special on Dialed In just outright dismissed the idea that Lance Lynn basically had any purpose or value for the 2018 New York Yankees. It was about Brian Cashman's epic genius on the international free agent market. And I totally get Hub's point. That was probably a big part of the deal, but it took like one fucking second for Lance Lynn to have to enter a game for the New York Yankees because Sonny Gray was shitting all over himself. Like, yeah. Sorry, dude. Sorry, Hubs. Like, Lance Lynn probably will play a role this year, and it's not just about getting international money.
Yeah, and he also, when Sonny Gray was acquired, wrote a blog basically saying that Brian Cashman was a genius and that he's worth every penny and that they should give him an extension after the season.
Can't win them all.
You really can't. You really can't. The Brewers go out and get Jonathan Scope from the Baltimore Orioles. And
favorite trade of the day.
Yeah, was it?
Yep. not necessarily the best or the most sync, because I think Archer is probably a better player, but I loved this deal.
I don't hate the deal. I hate the fact that they didn't get a fucking pitcher. You didn't do anything in the offseason. You did not get a pitcher in the offseason. You have an opportunity at the deadline to do something. Anybody. Go get somebody that can start a game for you. They don't do it. They go get Jonathan Scope, and you now have a situation where Mike Moustakas is playing third base, which moves Travis Shaw to second base, but then you get Scope, who plays second base, but has played shortstop professionally, just not a whole lot at the major league level. So now he goes to short, and you have Jesus Aguilar at first base, which puts Eric Thames in right field. So you have all these guys playing out of position, and I guess the strategy here is to just beer league softball teams to death, which hasn't really failed to this point. I mean, they're a game back in first place. So I don't know. I like the move. Love Scope. I think he turns one of the best double plays in the big leagues. But would have liked a pitcher. Would have really liked a pitcher for the Brew Crew.
Is Julius Chassin, is that the tip of your spear, Carabas?
I mean, that's Chase Anderson's having a good year. Wade Miley has looked good recently. I mean, Wade Miley in a postseason series, I'm not trying to watch that, but he has pitched well recently.
I love that. Our man Suter B took a hit.
That stuff, like, those pitchers play, though, in the National League. Like, whatever National League team makes it to the World Series is going to get bulldozed by whatever American League team gets there, except for the Phillies. Like, I have faith in the Phillies rotation to be able to go toe-to-toe with, the Astros, the Yankees, the Red Sox. But most rotations, like maybe the Cubs will be able to hold their own, especially I think Hamill's going to the National or back to the National League is you're sort of going to see a new Hamill's than the Hamill's that you've seen with the Rangers.
Last night?
Five shutout.
Yeah. Good little outing. Nice tidy little outing for Hamill's.
But it would have been nice if the Brewers just got one more weapon in that rotation. But, you know, we've seen August deals get made, so let's not rule out that they could add a starter once guys start to clear waivers. Waiver claims hardly ever manifest as any type of deal. The big blockbuster with the Dodgers and the Red Sox in 2012 when they had Josh Beckett, Adrian Gonzalez, and Carl Crawford go to the Dodgers, that the Dodgers claimed all those players.
I don't want to get stuck down this hole, but would you have predicted that Adrian Gonzalez would be the last player standing from that? At least between him and Crawford and Beckett.
I was gonna ride the Crawford train for a while.
Yeah, me too.
But he also had the longer deal.
Sure. Was it longer than Crawford's at the time?
Yeah, I think it was an 8-year extension, and Crawford was 7 years.
My God, what a time in baseball!
Yeah.
Back to Jonathan Scope. Why I like this deal? He has performed a lot better lately. He had a 587 OPS through like the very beginning of July. He's hit 347 with a 1.026 OPS since then with 9 home runs.
What's the starting point?
July 4th.
Oh, wow.
So in some ways, Jonathan Scope gained his independence.
That's right.
Yeah, thank you. The other part I like about this is that he's under control through or is arbitration eligible next year so that they could bring him back next year if they're inclined. And I also like the fact that, like, listen, I know a pitcher would have aligned more with their roster needs, but I do admire David Stern's willingness to say, okay, there isn't a pitcher that fits either A, our price range or our prospect package desires or that we think is a big enough upgrade. So rather than over pursue or not do anything, we're going to take a strength and make it even stronger.
Yeah.
And I do think that the Brewers offense combined with their bullpen is going to be a real force if they can get into October, even if the starting rotation remains pretty dicey.
That's a good take. That's a good take, Jay.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah, you're full of good takes today.
I try for at least one a podcast.
I would say you're at multiple good takes today.
Wow.
Yeah. Not to inflate your head or anything.
We'll send that feedback directly to Erica and Dave.
Yes. They listen every show.
No doubt.
Yeah, they listen every show. They know. The Phillies go out and get Wilson Ramos, or as Smitty would say, Wilson Ramos.
Or as Smitty would say,
yes.
The Jorge backup Alfaro's backup.
Yes.
Yeah. They went out and got a backup is what they did. Phillies, those fucking guys. That's, you know what I mean? Not short-sighted. Fucking Smitty.
Yeah, that was a tough showing. That was a tough showing for Smitty.
After I just told him, you don't know shit about baseball. And then you guys tell me, no, Smitty, he fucking knows. He's fucking pays attention. He's got it. Yeah, so.
He's
so
got it.
He's going to come in and back up Jorge Alfaro, and it's going to be Smitty, exit stage left.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, I like this move a lot. I like this move a lot. The Phillies, I want to give my honest take, and I want to come off that ledge where I've been sticking with the Nats for this whole year, so I'm trying to stay consistent, but.
Right, but you want, like, I can fucking feel you wanting to rip the shirt you're wearing off to let the Phillies shirt you're wearing on underneath come out.
I mean, I fucking love this Phillies team. I do.
Am I gonna have to? I might adopt the Phillies as my NL squad down the stretch here, just to fucking rub it in your grill.
I mean, that will not be rubbing it in my grill whatsoever. I love this Phillies team. I love this Phillies team. I do. I think, you know, there were some other areas that they could have improved, but. You get an all-star catcher. You have an all-star catcher who can hit, which is kind of a rare commodity in today's game. A lot of teams are looking at catchers being like, you know, if you're a good catcher, you can frame pitches, you can work a pitching staff, you have a job with us. And that's fine, because I don't necessarily disagree with that. I am fine sacrificing offense at the catching position. That's one of maybe two positions where I'm comfortable sacrificing a ton of offense for elite defense. I would say the other position would be center field. But outside of that, if you can get a catcher who can swing it, that is a rare commodity in today's game. The Phillies go out and get Wilson Ramos, and they upgrade their offense to add to what I keep calling arguably the scariest playoff rotation in the National League. That's how I feel about it. And I told you, I guaranteed Smitty an NLCS appearance by these Phillies.
You did. You did. And I told you the kind of impact that Jake Arrieta was going to have on this fucking squad, Carrabas, on this rotation. And I have to believe that's rang true. To believe that.
Of course.
And you bring in Ramos, like you mentioned, a guy that is now going to be able to handle a young staff. So you've got a veteran back there behind the dish. You've got one salty grizzly vet out there in Jake the Snake on the mound, slicing and dicing, steering these kids in the right direction. I like everything about the Phillies. Our man, Rhys Hoskins, the Sacktown Stinger. That's right. So it's a good showing. It's a good showing for the Phils here. Jared, I'm going to, God damn it, I can't. I don't want to get off the Nats.
So you can't yet. You can't yet. I jump, you jump. Right, Rose?
All right.
I can't wait to see which one of you lets the other sink to the fucking bottom.
I think what we're going to know, there's going to be a moment when we're like, okay, it's time. Like kind of the reverse Nationals-Mets game. It's going to be, you know, there's going to be a fucking ass kicking that they take. You're going to see guys just give up, and you're going to tell. It's going to be a feeling. You're going to watch it. You're going to be like, that was the moment that the Nats season officially died. They're on life support.
Bryce Harper's,
He's going to walk out of right field with two outs in an inning.
Yeah. Yeah. There's going to be like a gotcha moment where you can point to the national season officially dying before the season actually ends. And that's when I'll jump. I'm basically like another Titanic comparison. Like, I know the ship is sinking, but I'm kind of just moving up the backside of the boat to stay on the boat for as long as I possibly can.
Keep climbing those fucking boats there.
That's kind of where I'm at. Mookie Wilson is on the podcast today. Obviously, if you're a Mets fan, we just mentioned the Mets getting smoked by the Nationals. But this is, we can reflect to happier times with our interview with a legend, Mookie Wilson. All right, we are here with 1986 World Series champion Mookie Wilson. That pains me to say, because full disclosure, I am a Red Sox fan, sir, but I will do my best to put that aside for today.
All right, that's good enough.
We just passed the Hall of Fame weekend, so what were your thoughts on the 2018 class? You got Chipper Jones, Vladimir Guerrero, Jim Tomei, Trevor Hoffman, Jack Morris. Do you have any favorite personal stories with any of those gentlemen?
Yeah, no personal stories. I've just so admired most of those guys. I think the one guy, Guerrero, has just been a fantastic player over the years. I mean, I got to see him all of his years here in the National League. Just a fantastic, a little bit unorthodox, but goes to show you, man, you don't have to be perfect to be good, you know. And we know what Chipper has done over the years here with it in Atlanta. So all those guys, very deserving. Couldn't be happy for any of them.
Yeah, and you being a switch hitter, obviously, you know, Chipper went into the Hall of Fame as probably the second greatest switch hitter of all time. After Mantle and Chipper, who were some of the best switch hitters that you've ever seen?
I'm assuming you're not counting me in there. All right. No, I think people don't really understand how difficult it is to be a switch hitter. It is very, very difficult to maintain a good swing on both sides. And one side is usually more dominant than the other. So Chipper is rare. Ed Murray was a fantastic switch hitter, and stuff of that nature. We had Willie McGee, who was pretty good at it. But other than that, it's only a handful of guys that were really, really good switch hitters.
How did you become one? I've always thought, because, I mean, I'm a right-handed hitter. Dallas, I think, what do you hit, lefty? I think for the whole switch-hitting concept, is it something that starts at an early age where, a mentor or a parent says, you know, pick up the bat right-handed, pick it up left-handed, see which one is more comfortable, or you're not comfortable left-handed, we'll just work on it left-handed. How did you become a switch hitter?
Well, actually, I became a switch hitter on my second year in AAA.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. Everybody would tell me I was like crazy. It was crazy.
Come on, movie game is just too easy for some of us, huh?
You know, I became a switch hitter strictly by accident, out of frustration. I had a little altercation with Joe Torre, who was the manager then. Mm-hmm. I was in spring training, wasn't playing, and I was just sitting on the bench, and I got a little angry, walked to his office and said, send me down, let me learn how to switch hit. You know, and he said, okay. That shocked me right there to start with.
Oh.
And then once I was out, I had to do it. So I went down and I gave it a shot, and I taught myself, and it worked out for me. I wouldn't advise that, and I don't recommend switch hitting kids right now, but it's a difficult thing.
Well, why, Mook, let me ask you, why would you not recommend it? Because I think about the way the game is going right now. I think about the way offense is going, the era of the three-true outcome, meaning you're going to walk, you're going to get your lights punched out, or you're going to hit a bomb. You're going to hit a fucking tank, all right? So those are pretty much the way that things are going these days. What if, and again, think about the shifting that's going on.
Yeah.
What if you're a guy that is just really hard for other teams to defend? Because, number one, you can hit from the left side or the right side, and you're somebody who can spray the ball. So I'm interested to hear why you might think that's something that they should maybe steer away from.
Well, the biggest thing is if they have a shift on you as a left-hand hitter and you switch to the right side, you just change the shift. That's all you've done there. You don't know what type of hitter you are from the other side. See, that's the whole thing. Myself, I was a pull hitter on the left side, and the right side I actually hit the ball the other way much, much better. is very, very difficult to be consistent on both sides. As a matter of fact, I was a natural right-hand hitter, and I became a better left-hand hitter because I just didn't get that bats on the right side that I needed. And for that reason, as a young player, you know, you have to have some kind of foundation to go over to the other side and learn how to switch it. You know, if you're a poor hitter on the right side, you're probably going to be a poor hitter on the left side. That's just the way it is, you know. So that's why I don't recommend. Learn how to hit on one side, establish some kind of, success. And then if there's a particular reason why you need to go over there, not just because it's a sexy thing to do, but right. You have to do it for a reason. So I kind of recommend it to kids, look, learn how to hit from one side first, and then if you want to go to the other side, at least you have something to carry over.
All right, let's.
I want to ask you one more thing about the switch hitting because I get to watch every day one of the best going right now in the game, as far as I'm concerned, from both sides of the plate, a man named Jed Lowrie. Got his first All-Star nod this year, playing second base for the Oakland A's. And talking to him a little bit, I asked him, is there anything to you being a natural right-handed hitter and then obviously garnering most of your at-bats from the left side because of the frequency in which you face right-handed pitching?
Yeah.
Is there anything to the notion that, oh, you know what? I haven't seen this. I haven't seen a lefty in a while. I'm going from the right side. I don't have any bad habits going right now. Nothing's too complicated. And is it okay or safe to think that you might be more comfortable from the right side at times, having not seen so many ABs?
No. It's if you don't get the ABs, it's going to be uncomfortable. And as a matter of fact, more to that point, I considered giving up hitting from the right side altogether, believe it or not.
Wow.
Because I got to the point where I was that uncomfortable hitting from the right side. But then, because, you know, the Mets came in, you know, started doing the platoon thing with myself and Lenny Dykstra, and I basically started hitting from the right side only, you know, because I didn't play when no right-hand pitchers were there because Lenny was the starter. And I basically hit from the right side. So it's a give and take thing. It's going to depend on the individual and how well he can adjust and how much work you can get done. But I commend him for being able to do it. And, hey, I've known guys that they were uncomfortable that even when a left-hand pitcher came up, he still batted from the left side. So it happens.
Mookie, we got to talk 1986 World Series. I'm a masochist. I know it's a great moment for you, not so much for me. I got to know, what was the mood like in the clubhouse right before Game 7? Did you guys know that you had it in the bag, or was there a nervous energy? Was it a little bit of both? After the winning Game 6, we all know what happened that night. Everyone sort of forgets about Game 7. They all think it was over after Game 6. Talk to me about Game 7.
Okay, before I get to that, you know you won a couple since that, right?
We got three. It's pretty nice. Yeah.
Okay. All right, that's me. Did this. It is keep getting greedy, man. You never say
it. Every day I deal with this guy, Mookie. Every goddamn day.
No, man.
Jesus.
Okay. All right. But, you know, in all honesty, after Game 6, in the clubhouse, the atmosphere, it was just like Game 7 was the formality.
Yeah.
You know, we knew we had it because I don't know, but you're looking at dugout on the other side of the field, man, they were done. They were cooked. Right. They were absolutely cooked. Even though people forget that they were actually leading the game in Game 7.
Yep.
They were up, and there was no panic on our side whatsoever. Unlike Game 6, there was a little panic. But Game 7, there was no panic whatsoever. So it was a very calm. We were upset that we had a rainout after Game 6. We wanted to play right away. I was a little concerned about that, but it didn't matter. You know, the guys can play. They can ball ready to play the next day.
Was it a myth, or did it actually happen during Game 6? They showed a message on the video board that said congratulations to the 1986 World Series champion Boston Red Sox.
That actually happened.
Someone
hit the button a little bit fast. You know, and not only that, you had our champagne in your clubhouse. We had to go back and get it.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring that up.
Dallas is enjoying this way too much.
They take all that plastic down in a hurry, man.
rip it down. The champagne is in the wrong room. Someone's getting fired, Mookie, and it's all because of you boys. I love it.
Just think what would have happened if the players were walking in that plastic was on the locker room. Just think what would have happened.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, what's your relationship like with Bill Buckner? Like, you guys have done autograph shows together, but how long did it take him before he warmed up to the idea of signing his name on what was obviously the worst moment of his entire life?
After '86, Buckner and I didn't speak until '89, '90. Is when we spoke. I got traded over to Toronto, and he was with Kansas City. And we hadn't spoken to each other until we met each other in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. I went to the ballpark, and I'm on the right field fence, right field grass out there, or turf then. And I was stretching, and the batting cages was down the right – I'm sorry, down the left field line. The batting cages were down there, so the Kansas City team started walking down that way. And Buckner walked up toward me and stood over me when I'm stretching and said, "Hey, Mookie, you want to hit me some ground balls?" You know? And from that moment, we've just been the best of friends. I mean, he really broke down because I didn't know what to say to him.
Yeah,
I did not know what to say, and he broke the ice. And we've been very good friends. We talk probably twice a month. About different things. We never talk a lot of baseball.
Yeah.
We talk about everything but baseball. He's just a fantastic. He's been a great friend. I talk with him probably more than I do most of the teammates. So
wow,
it's just been great.
I can't remember if it was 2008 or 2009. The Red Sox finally welcomed him back, and he threw out the first pitch at Fenway Park. Did you get to see that moment live at all? And if you did, what sort of emotions did it make you feel?
I didn't get to see it, but we were together like the week before, and he told me he was going to do it. And then we got together shortly after that, and he told me it was probably one of the most emotional times he's ever had. He really loved Boston. He really liked Boston. And he went back, he said it was one of the greatest moments that he had ever had for them to do that. So I was happy for him, and the whole idea or the hard time he's had with it. It was a bit overblown, but you know that's how the media does sometimes, so you kind of live with it. He's been great about it.
Yeah, because I mean, I was born in '89, so I didn't see '86 live. But diehard Red Sox fan, so like I grew up learning the history of that through DVDs and books and everything. So you kind of figure out, Bill Buckner and the ball through his legs, this and that, and it becomes this big thing. But then you go back and you do your own research. And you're like, this guy almost had 3,000 hits. Like, why is he only known for this one play? Like, I feel like if that happened today. I don't even know who a comparison would be. Like maybe Johnny Damon, a guy like that coming up on 3,000 hits. If Johnny Damon had a play that cost the Red Sox a World Series, sure, he would be known for that play. But the narrative would switch to, he almost had 3,000 hits, was a very good player, played very hard, loved the city. Like, why was that never a part of the narrative? It was just the ball through the legs. Was it because they hadn't won yet?
No, believe it or not, Bill and I, we've talked about that many times. And we talked about how that play really changed both of our lives and how people view us as ball players. It was really upsetting initially when we started because I think we did share that. We felt that our careers were being overshadowed by one play.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that we contribute more than that to Major League Baseball and to our organizations. Mm-hmm. And matter of fact, when people walk up to me on the street, they say Mookie 86. That's my nickname, Mookie 86. It was frustrating, but then we talked and we said, we're part of baseball history,
right?
And we just need to embrace it, and that's what we've done. We've embraced it, and we've been okay with it.
How much baseball are you watching these days, and who's your favorite guy to watch?
I watch a lot of baseball. I'm at City Field a lot.
Okay.
I'm at City Field a lot. As a matter of fact, part of what we're doing right now is the Mets have partnered with StubHub, to give the fans that greater experience at City Field.
Mm-hmm.
Place to get the food, where you want to take photos, where you want to sit to get a foul ball, where you want to sit to get a home run, and partnershiping with StubHub has given us the opportunity to do that. I'm there all the time, so it gets me to share that with fans how I enjoy baseball as a fan now. Mm-hmm. So I get to enjoy baseball. It's a great, great game. I don't have to worry about that 3-2 slider, that 2-0 changeup.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. I can look at the other guys, see how did you miss it. You
right.
know. Now, so it's just a lot of fun. I enjoy baseball. I don't enjoy watching it on television as much as I do live.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's been great to be able to be a fan for a change.
Who's your guy, though? Who's the guy that you're watching the most?
The guy I admire the most, I tell you, baseball has a lot of young players that are just fantastic athletes. They are going to do the game a great service. Mike Trout is phenomenal. I love Bryce Harper. You have the young pitcher throwing the ball 100 miles an hour,
yeah.
You know, and you just didn't see that. There's just so the guy in Cleveland, Lindor,
yeah.
Lindor,
yeah.
You had Altuve in Houston, you know, and let's not forget about Mookie Betts, okay? Let's not forget about him now. He is fantastic, you know. I mean, the name might have something to do with it, but that's okay. We have to tell the story. But the game is just rich with young talent right now, and I want people to appreciate the game for what it is. Forget about the analytics. You know, and all the other stuff that goes along with it. Come to the ballpark and enjoy these athletes perform at peak. I mean, it's just fantastic.
Well, you talk about athletes performing at their peak, Mookie, and sort of doing away with the numbers. And not doing away with the numbers in terms of what's going to help you fall in love with the game. You want to just come and enjoy a good ball game. I want to take you back now to your playing days. And a man that was just inducted into the Hall of Fame this weekend, one by the name of Jack Morris.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can just sort of lay out, I guess, for fans who didn't get to see him pitch, might not really understand what sort of competitor he was, but kind of lay out what it meant to have a guy like Jack on a club, someone that you had to face. I believe I'm not going to lie here. I looked it up. 4-for-10 lifetime against Jack Morris, hitting 400 off the Hall of Famer. Sorry about it, Mookie. You're bad. But just explain what a guy like that can mean, because the numbers might not say he's a first ballot shoe-in Hall of Famer, but the guys that competed against him probably have a little different opinion.
Well, this is the argument that I've had with the Hall of Fame and the voters of the Hall of Fame. I know that's not going to get me any votes, but that's okay. I'm going to say it anyway. I think that when you start focusing solely on the numbers, that you miss the essence of the game. You miss what the game is really all about, and that is the dedication that players put into the game, the contribution that they give, even if the numbers don't show. But everything that happens, you know, everything you do on ball field don't always reflect in the numbers. It reflects in the attitude and the teaching, you know, that comes on young ball players, and the stability that Jack Morris was a stabilizer. Man, he was a stable on any team he went to. You know, Captain Jack was the man. You know, and he's not a guy that you want look forward to facing every day. I mean, but that's the kind of thing that I wish that people would get away from. Numbers are great, and you need to understand those numbers, but you also need to understand the contribution that ball players give to the game. And because of the numbers, a lot of guys won't make the Hall of Fame, but that has nothing to do with their contribution and how important they were to the baseball and to the organization. And Captain Jack was a perfect example.
Mookie, the last question that we asked to all of our guests, got to ask you this question as well. It is, if you could go back to any point in baseball history, before your time, during your time, what would it be? You can witness it live in person.
Man, if I can go back, I would go back. After '86, I was starting '87, and I would start to reassess why that club only won one World Series, and I would start to evaluate those players. And I would not trade Kevin Mitchell. I will not trade Roger McDowell. I will not trade Lenny Dykstra. I will not trade Mookie Wilson. I will give it one more hurrah and see if we can come up put that magic back together again.
That's a great
Love
answer.
That.
Like that. Yeah. Not,
I do.
Yeah, see, I got three World Series. You want more than one. That's how it works out.
Here we go.
Mookie.
I can't believe I'm talking to a Boston fan who wasn't even there.
Yeah.
He wasn't even alive.
I can tell you right now, I've probably watched that highlight more times than anyone on this call right now. That is something that I have watched a billion times.
But I can tell you this. I've been to Boston on quite a few times since then. I was there when they won the World Series. Was it 2000?
Which time?
The first one.
04.
I was on the streets of Boston when they played. When they came back with the Yankees, right? They came back and beat the Yankees.
Yep.
I was in Boston, and I had the time of my life because I was there as a fan, not playing. And I had a great time. It's a great baseball town. It really, really, really is. I mean, they're a little greedy and a little bit. They're never satisfied, but they're fans.
Yeah, great fans even, Mookie.
Yeah.
Mookie, thank you so much for coming on here today. It wasn't as painful as I thought it would be to revisit 86. So thank you for that. We appreciate the time.
Oh, I took it easy on you.
Yeah, you did.
Thanks, Mookie. Much appreciated, big dog.
Hey, man. Thanks a lot, man. Good luck to you guys.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, big thanks to Mookie Wilson for coming on the podcast here today. He took it easy on me. He said he was going to, and he did, and he let me down nice. Honestly, he was right, though. The three World Series titles helps a lot. The fact that I wasn't born yet helps a lot. But I don't think – so the whole thing here, the whole he wasn't born yet aspect to it, if the Red Sox didn't win in 04, 07, and 13, you bet your ass that like talking about 86 would hurt. Because, I mean, at least you still have that. I mean, you wouldn't be talking about going on you'd be talking about 100 years this year. It would be 100 years since the Red Sox won a World Series if they don't pull off those three rings. So you bet your ass that 86 would still hurt. I mean, people would be throwing that in my face to this day. I would be getting gifts sent at me anytime that I'm excited about the Red Sox. People would remind me about 1986, about how you should have won that World Series, and then you wouldn't be talking about 100 years without it. So, yeah. 100 years definitely would be quite the stinger for your boy over here, Dallas.
Yeah, he did. He took it easy. He was kind. He was gentle. He let you know, though. He let you know exactly the mindset of that club heading in. That was great. He told you. And we've heard it before, but it's just good to hear it directed right at you. Oh, it was a fucking done deal. Mookie, what did you think about Game 7 coming in? It was a wrap.
Yeah, I did like that part.
I believe he used the phrase, cooked. We knew cooked. They were cooked. They were cooked. I fucking love it. They were cooked.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't wrong. I think you know what time it is, Dallas. Hold on. BetDSI has been in business for over 20 years, paying winners. A-plus rated on sportsbook review sites. Use your sports knowledge to make some extra cash. It's easy to use mobile playing interface. You play, win, get paid. BetDSI offers odds on everything, including live betting and props as games are in action. BetDSI offers odds on pretty much everything else, too, including major sports, politics, reality TV. Use promo code RUN25 and get a free $25 wager just for registering. If you decide to deposit, you will get a 200% bonus match on your money. Once again, go to BetDSI.com and use promo code RUN25. Get a free $25 wager on the house and 200% extra bonus when you deposit. That's RUN25 to get your free wager and start winning today.
Some say that's your best ad read, BetDSI.
BetDSI, yeah, I flow through that one quite nicely.
It's a wheelhouse.
Yeah, it's right there for you. You know what time it is, folks.
It's time.
Our most popular recurring segment that we came up with in the last month and a half. That's the feedback I've gotten. Homer Minute. Dallas,
you get
the floor first this week.
Do I get the floor first? Wow. All right, hold on.
Yep, I'll give you a second.
Let me gather my thoughts here.
Whenever you're ready, let me know, and I will tell you.
All right, yeah, go ahead.
Dallas, your Homer Minute starts right now.
the fucking green and all of all. Next stop, postseason town, Carrabas.
Wow.
Postseason town. The fucking M's. You feel that? The Astros. You feel that? It's heating up, folks. The green and gold are rolling right into the playoffs. I fucking love it. Stake and claim that second wild card spot. Boys, this is a lineup that's featuring seven, I believe at least seven guys that are double digits in long balls. They are fucking swinging the best team in baseball since June 16th, but we know about that. How about the fucking game that Jonathan Lucroy had last night? Last night, little 3-for-4 piece. He's coming around. Franklin Barreto as well. You plug and play him. He gets himself his first 3-3 knock game at the big league level. The fucking pitching staff right now, the bullpen, has been shatting upon folks as they have continued to do so. You've got guys at the top of the lineup, Nick Martini.
Oh, fuck.
Jared Carrabas, your Homer Minute begins right now.
So Chris Sale was basically like, oh, the Yankees are coming to town. I can take that series off because I have the lowest ERA of all time against the New York Yankees. And everyone that wants to say, oh, he's ducking him just like David Price ducked him, he literally has the lowest ERA of any starting pitcher in history, minimum 10 starts. The Red Sox go into this four-game series, 5.5-game lead in the division. You have BJ on Thursday. You got Ricky Raindrops on Friday. Nathan Eovaldi, 0.8 ERA with the Red Sox on Saturday. You close it out with Davey Tinglefingers on Sunday. I say 3 out of 4 for the Boston Red Sox. And if they do sweep, it's night-night for the New York Yankees. Put the division to bed.
Wow. Jared, so confident. He left 12 seconds of his Homer Minute on the table. You don't see that very often.
No.
Justin Havens, your Homer Minute begins right now. So, obviously, the big thing with the Indians was will they or won't they with Bryce Harper, right? You don't see the Indians connected to players like that very often, and I will admit that there was a part of me that really, really wanted the Indians to trade for Bryce Harper. The emotional side of me wanted to see the little Indians that could go out and trade for arguably the game's biggest star, even if he's not necessarily playing that way. But my intellectual side is glad that they didn't, because I don't think that the window ends after 2018. And when we're talking about where they are in terms of the playoff race, you're basically acquiring Bryce Harper for as few as 12 plate appearances in a postseason series. And to me, because they're going to get there regardless of how the regular season goes, to me, that's just not worth mortgaging the next few years of your franchise, even though seeing Harper in an Indians uniform would have been unlike anything I've seen as a fan.
Wow. Right on the dot.
Wow.
Look at you.
You're a pro.
I can fucking produce the shit out of it.
You're a pro.
All right. You know what Sunday is, right?
Yeah, I do. And here's the thing about Sunday. We'll talk about Sunday in a second.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to Boston this weekend with Hubs. We're going to do a little Red Sox Yankees video.
I'm sorry.
At Fenway Park. And I was told by Dave that I can't tweet about Red Sox Yankees because Rough and Rowdy's on Sunday. I find that to be problematic.
I don't love it.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right, let's compromise. Yeah. I was like, let's compromise here. Like, I'll tweet out Rough and Rowdy stuff, but I'm still going to tweet about the game. Like, you approved a trip for me to go to Fenway Park for this series. And then you want me to tweet about boxing while I'm at Fenway Park. So I found that to be quite odd because I'm not even going to be watching it. You want me to tweet about, you approved a trip for me to go to Fenway Park for a four-game series.
It's what makes the most sense, Jared. It's what makes the most sense.
Yeah. It's like, I'll help out because I want people to buy Rough and Rowdy. And most people can watch Rough and Rowdy on their laptops. So you can watch Red Sox Yankees and Rough and Rowdy at the same time, which is great because on Sunday, August 5th, the greatest phenomenon in Barstool sports history returns to pay-per-view. It's Rough and Rowdy, live from Youngstown, Ohio, the birthplace of boxing. You have Elprez, Bill Burr, and Big Cat are on the call for the most, and Roan's going to be there too. Shout out to Roan. on the call for the most stacked card Rough and Rowdy has ever seen. Pat McAfee will be doing his best Michael Buffer impression on introductions. Gay Pat will be taking on Bray Mentier, a convict who's not exactly the biggest fan of homosexuals. An ex-police officer obligated to step down from the force is fighting a skateboarder from his former salary on the line. That's actually pretty cool because I think Dave is he had to step down because he did a video with Roan, and then Dave is basically offering him like double his salary if he wins this fight. So that's pretty cool. brothers will once again square off for bragging rights. Heavyweights will clash, and of course, the Ring Girls could still overshadow all those matchups and steal the show. Pre-order Rough and Rowdy 4 at buyrnr.com right now for only $15.99. If you wait till the day of the fight, August 5th, the price skyrockets to $19.99, and you don't want to be the schmuck who paid an extra $4 when you didn't have to. That's buyrnr.com, buyrnr.com. So I'll be tweeting about Rough and Rowdy. I told him, I was like, send me highlights. I'll tweet them out. I haven't missed. This is the first Rough and Rowdy I think I've ever missed. But I'll be at Fenway Park for Sunday Night Baseball. Davey Tinglefingers.
Good job.
Yeah.
National reporter. Good job.
No days off.
Time for some Twitter questions from the grounds crew.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Wow. Thank you.
All right. This is from Robbie Lamb, at RL the Third. If Mike Trout played for the Cubs... I think you could sub in a lot of teams here, but if Mike Trout played for the Cubs from 2009 to 2014, would the same narrative exist that his talents are being wasted because of his lack of postseason appearances, or does this narrative only exist because he plays for the Angels, a team on the West Coast? Dallas, you want to take this first?
I think the narrative would be completely and totally different, meaning everybody across baseball, as far as fan base goes, would have a Mike Trout jersey. Even more people than they do now, because the Cubs being the lovable losers up until that point would have definitely made the fact that they have the best player in baseball an even bigger story. He would have been in your lap and on your TV every Sunday night during that time period, because it would have been an attractive franchise to have on television. And we know that's how TV operates. So, yes, I think the narrative would be even stronger surrounding Mike Trout than it is today, if you can believe that.
I think it's quite obvious that if Mike Trout played for a bigger market, I don't even think it's just an East Coast West Coast thing. I think if he played for the Dodgers, it would be big for him. Obviously, the East Coast thing helps, and that's not. I don't even think that's East Coast bias. I think there's more teams pay attention to the East. I mean, more fans pay attention to the East Coast teams. But I do think that it would have helped him a lot if he had just simply played for the Dodgers. But you also sort of look at what Rob Manfred was talking about how much of a favor does he do himself in terms of his marketability? Because we sort of look at the East Coast, West Coast thing. We talk about the big market, small market thing. Ken Griffey Jr. played for the fucking Seattle Mariners. The Seattle Mariners, right. And he was a megastar, and it's that's why I don't want to make excuses for Trout. And Trout doesn't want to be a megastar. That's his choice.
That's it. That's the whole thing. He's not asking anybody to make excuses for him. He's not. Mike Trout is not sitting at home going, "Man, I wish I knew how to get my followers up."
Yeah, he doesn't give a fuck. I almost respect that. He's like, hey, I'm a baseball player. I am focused on being good at baseball. And he does that better than anybody in the sport. So from that aspect, if you don't want to be a megastar, then don't. I just think that you're doing a disservice to the sport that you're playing by not wanting to be a personality that's going to attract more and more fans.
Ooh. You know what? I know this isn't a Twitter question, but it poses a question that I just thought about real quickly. Phil Mickelson and him dragging that putt during the tournament a few weeks ago, or a month ago, or whatever the fuck it was ago, right? That lit the golf world on fire because it's Phil Mickelson, and he's a keeper of the game, and he has a responsibility to the game and to the fan base, right, of golf,
to be doing things the right way all the time, leaving children with that sort of impression. Is there anything to Mike Trout understanding that he has a quote-unquote responsibility of sorts to grow the game and to attract people to the game? Like, does he understand that he is essentially being likened to the Michael Jordan of our sport, but can't drum up the interest? So is there anything to Mike Trout needing to feel a certain level of responsibility, or is there anything to Mike Trout having a responsibility to the game to do his level best to promote it because of his star power? Or can Mike Trout just look at the game of baseball, say, thank you for giving me what you have, and look at its fans and go, sorry, I'm just not that guy, and keep it moving?
Yeah, I think that's the most frustrating part, is that he doesn't feel the need to be that guy, because he could be that guy.
See, I think he does a lot of things that would be expected.
That people don't see.
Yeah, that people don't see and that would be expected of a quote-unquote face of baseball. I just don't think it gets the eyeballs because of where he is. Mm-hmm. The fact that he's probably doing a lot of it a little bit under the radar without pulling cameras over to him. And I also think, in terms of, like, you can be a guy who is a good ambassador for the game and who does good things and interacts with the fans and young players and still not have a dynamic personality. And I think that's the distinction we need to draw here, is that Mike Trout is making an effort. Mike Trout is a good person. He interacts, by all accounts. He does interact with fans, and that's his attempt to grow the game. But you can't fundamentally change who a person is, and he's never going to be like an edgy, sometimes dickhead like Bryce Harper, and he's never going to be a guy who's walking around smiling and doing fun things in the infield like Francisco Lindor. That's just not who the guy is.
So, yeah. So to not call Bryce Harper the dickhead, because I was going to go the Bryce Harper example, Mike Trout is not the guy who's going to be mic'd up talking to Joe Buck about the Dallas Cowboys during that segment that they did. That's not what you're going to get out of Mike Trout, okay? A free-willing, open, free-flowing conversation with lots of his personality coming out after just being sort of teed up. That's not going to happen. Like, Mike Trout is more of the one-word answer sort of guy, and that's what you're going to get.
And I don't even mean dickhead pejoratively. I just meant an edgy dude, or he's a guy who says things.
Hey, you guys realize, how about this? Let me ask you this question. How many guys have a fucking shoe in Major League Baseball?
I honestly have no idea.
Couldn't even tell you.
Yeah.
And you know that Mike Trout has a shoe, right?
Does he really?
I do now that you told me.
There you go. That is my point, fellas. That's my point, is even when he's doing the things that you would want the star power player to do, it still doesn't matter. Yeah, Mike Trout has a fucking shoe.
Mike Trout looks pretty cool.
A shoe deal, and nobody knows about it.
No idea.
That's fucking insane. Like, I wear, put it like this. Not anymore because I got hooked up, but I used to rock Mike Trout's cleats in my softball league. I was wearing the fucking Trouties. Huh. Believe it. But just because, I was like, yeah, kid's got a fucking shoe? Fuck yeah. I'll support a baseball player who's got his own shoe. Absolutely. I had the Randy Johnsons when Randy Johnson was rocking them some bitches. Yeah, the Nolan Ryan old schools. Rock them too.
All right.
But Mike Trout's got a fucking tennis shoe and nobody knows.
It looks dope.
Two more quick ones before we head out. This is from Hugh Honey. Shout out Vic Vinegar at John_Wilson. I know this isn't a deadline question, but Vegas odds have Juan Soto at +125 and Gleyber Torres +150 for rookies of the year. I'd be crazy not to immediately lay money on that. I agree with you.
Wait.
According to this guy, the lines or the odds in Vegas are Soto +125 and Torres +150, which means, for those of you who don't bet, if you lay money on those guys,
$100 you bet, you will win $150.
Yep.
Oh, that is a fucking guarantee.
So Gleyber, go ahead and book that. Yeah, go ahead.
Why wouldn't you book Soto?
Gleyber. Do you think it's just a runaway for him?
I think he has built enough of a lead, particularly over like Acuña, where I just don't know that if Acuña has a month and a half in him to catch Soto has done.
He just hit his 10th, and I don't even
I would bet on that is the consensus here.
Both.
But we're not telling you to bet on it. We're saying hypothetically, if we were going to bet, we would strongly consider doing so.
Yes.
Last question. This is from Blog Boy at Real Garvey Biggs. Is it too late to ask if the D-backs have done enough to give a real shot at winning the West? No, it's not, because your question is clearly being featured. We didn't really talk about the D-backs. They, outside of Eduardo Escobar, they didn't do a ton. Jake Diekman, I guess. Was that enough?
Brad Ziegler?
They went and got Brad Ziegler back.
Sure. Brad Ziegler, Jake Diekman, and Eduardo Escobar was basically their trade deadline. Does that give them a real shot at winning the West?
I don't necessarily think that their moves made or break them.
Or is the team as currently constructed?
Yes. Yeah. I think they are good enough to win the West. Yes, but I don't think that their deadline moves made or broke that stance.
I think they're good enough. I think they're good enough to win the West.
I do too. I thought the Eduardo Escobar pickup was
sneaky good.
Really strong.
Yeah.
Particularly given
that one fell by the wayside because it wasn't on deadline day.
Correct. And I think everybody, maybe this is just me, but I feel like a decent chunk of people don't understand that Eduardo Escobar is like not a young player.
Yeah.
He's like 30 years old, right, and he's a free agent at the end of the year. They didn't give much to give him up. And I think the news about Jake Lamb, that he has fraying in his shoulder and is probably not going to be contributing much for the rest of the year, makes that pickup look even smarter. And I'm sure they knew about that at the time they made the deal. But I liked their pickups. And I think Diekman, I'm not a big Ziegler fan in terms of what he's bringing pitching-wise, but I do think Diekman is a really nice
ground
pickup.
Ball rate. Come on, how do you not appreciate a guy who can keep the ball on the ground, especially late in the inning?
I appreciate the ball on the ground. I don't appreciate what seems to be like every fourth time he steps on the mound, having it be one of those all those balls find the holes sort of day. But you know,
hey, you know, we got to touch on something here.
Please, please.
A little national minute here, Johnny Cueto.
Oh yeah.
He did like a Instagram live video last night, and I tried to tune into it to see if he was going to talk about it. But he's a very big Instagram presence. But Johnny Cueto going under the knife, Tommy John surgery, done for the year. I mean, it's this late in the season. You would imagine he's going to miss next year too, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not about imagining. That's a done deal, pal.
Yeah.
That's a done deal. Johnny Cueto's not coming back in 12 months from Tommy John surgery. This is a minimum 14 to 16 month piece here, especially just because of his age. You want to make sure that he's going to be able to live out some of this contract here. It's shitty because, Jay, I think you talked about it. It went from, holy fuck, I'm hurt, I need to have surgery, to like 48 hours after that. Oh no, it's totally cool. It was just a little barky. Sorry, we were a little aggressive on diagnosing this thing. I'll be totally fine. I'm going to go out there and pitch. Oh, my God, it hurts again. Oh, wait, I should have had surgery?
And I don't know all of the inside details on this, but I don't even necessarily blame the Giants, because it does feel like Johnny Cueto throughout his history has been one of those guys where like 90% of the time something is always a little bit off, right? Like he's always a little bit sore, or there's like a little barking in the elbow, or like this has been going on in some form for like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
It is a really unfortunate situation for the Giants though, because a few nuggets on this, he has $68 million guaranteed left on that deal, which stretches from 2019, 2020 to 2021. They technically have a 22 club option, but I'm including the buyout of that because there's no way they exercise that.
So 2019 gone. You can just book that. That's done. So there's no 2019.
That's basically $21 or $22 million down the drain for next year. To that point, then, his innings pitched have decreased each year since he signed with the Giants. He threw over 200 in 2016. He threw like 140 last year. He will end this year throwing 53, and I would pound the under on 53 innings next year, which means that's probably four straight or 4 years of the deal where he has not he's delivered less and less each year, and then $125 million is already committed to the payroll for the Giants for both the 2019 and 2020 seasons, so that this is not necessarily a situation where they can kind of just write off Johnny Cueto and go out and sign somebody. They are committed to this team, and this is going to get ugly. Oh, I think.
Yeah. Do you think they're going to regret not doing anything at the deadline? Like, they just didn't do anything.
What is there to be done?
I'm sure plenty of teams wanted Andrew McCutchen. I mean, I'm sure the Indians would have liked Andrew McCutchen.
Sure. I think they're in a very...
Especially after Adam Jones saying that he wanted to stay in Baltimore, you immediately move on to the next best option, which would have been McCutchen.
Go ahead, Dallas.
One thing you have to think about is just the business aspect of what the Giants have done in San Francisco. Meaning, like, the idea of even entertaining moving Bumgarner, you can't do that. Your fans will quit coming to the baseball game. You like the McCutchen and the Longoria, those are guys that you went and got to sort of routine your fans. Like, hey, we're not completely mailing this fucking thing in. Like, we're not going to go through this rebuild. We're just going to retool. We start moving those guys, and now that I got the poll, the fans are like, all right, so are we done this year? Can we quit coming to the game now?
Well,
like, what do we do? So the Giants are in a position where they've got to pay attention to these moves, because it's part of their business model. These players are a huge part of their business model in San Francisco. They're very dedicated to their fan base, so they don't lend themselves to just willy-nilly type flipping guys left and right, moving guys around. Their fan base would get very, very frustrated very quickly, very irritated very quickly, and they don't want to risk the chance of not being able to sell out AT&T Park when they're going to finish, you know, when they're not going to win the division.
Well, and here's the thing, and this kind of speaks to what you were saying, is that when you go all in on this veteran-heavy approach, if it doesn't work out, you're kind of stuck in a bad spot, because nobody wants Jeff Samardzija. Nobody wants Evan Longoria. Nobody wants Johnny Cueto, particularly now. Andrew McCutchen's trade value was, I would guess, modest at best. They're now in this situation where, had they even sold the Will Smiths of the world, which is probably a legitimate point, they still would be so saddled with this veteran declining aging core. And that's why, like, going for Evan Longoria, there was so much risk involved in that, because if he doesn't bounce back, and he has not bounced back, then you're on the hook for like $80 million of a below average player. And that's what they have now. And that would be less of a concern if your entire team wasn't propped up by Madison Bumgarner and Buster Posey on each side. And Buster's not the same guy that he was, particularly offensively. And Bumgarner's great, but that's not the whole deal. But they're in a tough spot, and we'll see where they go from here.
Remember when Brian Cashman tried to sell – I mean, where the Giants tried to sell Jeff Samardzija to the Yankees, being like, hey, he's available. Yeah.
I'm sure that he is.
Thank you.
He's available. Yeah, hey, what do we got going on in – oh, Big Cat. El Gato, huh? You big pussy. What about Chris Bryant?
Yeah.
It's been a week, boys.
Sure. Oh, he's on the DL.
Still hadn't touched the fucking baseball.
Yeah, that's
still
bad news.
Still hadn't touched the baseball. Yeah. It's been a week.
Yeah.
That can't be good. It's him and Darvish. Good.
Maybe we'll get Big Cat on the next pod to do a little funeral for Chris Bryant.
Yeah, that'll be sad.
You want an opportunity right now to walk that take back about you wanting you Darvish over my man Jake Arrieta early in the year?
Well, that's obviously not going well for me and Jared.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bad one. Yep.
So you guys go ahead and fucking blow me for that. The Astros, Correa, Altuve, Springer, these guys are banged up. The only reason I even bring this up is because all the shit I've been talking about the Oakland A's having the Houston Astros in their crosshairs right now. And I was an asshole and a complete moron for thinking that the A's had a shot at the postseason at the beginning of the year. Well, I don't look like such a big asshole right now. And that's all due in part to them.
Nah.
Has nothing to do with
still an asshole. Still an asshole.
Yeah, for sure. Still an
still
asshole.
An asshole. just an accurate one.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, a factually correct asshole.
A razor sharp brown eye.
Yeah, good for you, Dallas.
What if I appreciate you guys not piling on? what if these guys aren't right as a unit? Does that give the Oakland A's any shot, any hope, an opening whatsoever to creep in
to the division conversation.
Nope. And that's it from us this week. We'll have you back next week. Tune into the digital show tonight. It'll be really fun. Can't wait for episode 54. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Don't hate, Karamas. Don't fucking hate. Oh, we coming. We fucking coming.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.